Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
we started to burn too many things we found. That's the magnificent Dar Williams singing with the Rivertown Kids on the Tomorrow's Children album, and with David Burns and, of course, the great Pete Seeger. We are going to be talking today in Solartopia with three great guests, and we're going to be discussing the accelerating death spiral of the nuclear power industry, a most gratifying topic, although we are praying and hoping and working to get these reactors, 99 remaining, shut in the United States, shut, remaining operating in the United States, shut as soon as possible. Who's with us here? Dick Lenson, are you with us?
Afternoon, Harvey. How are you?
Great, Dick. How are you? So this is Dick Lenson, the great Dick Lenson, talking to us from Chicago. You're with EDF, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, the Environmental Defense Fund. And Dick has been writing steadily about the situation in Ohio and in Illinois with these reactors that are no longer competitive, getting bailed out. But it appears that we may have won in Ohio. So that's prompted this. We're going to start there. Pat Morita, are you with us? Oh, Pat's not with us yet. Pat is the chair of the Ohio Sierra Club.
Committee. I'm sorry, I was on mute. Hi, Harvey and everybody.
Oh, you were just taking a nap. It's okay, Pat. We understand. So Pat's my good buddy here in the Central Ohio. Been working for decades together on shutting these mistakes by the Lake, the Perry and Davis-Besse nuclear plants. And as I say, we may be close to victory in some ways. We're going to have to see how soon they shut, but it's looking better. And Dick's going to start with us. We also have Kevin Camps, a frequent guest on this show. Kevin, from the Beyond Nuclear Organization. Are you with us, Kevin?
Hey, Harvey. Yes, I am.
Wow, what a great turnout. Okay, so what we're going to do here is we're going to start talking about the situation in Ohio, the bellwether state, the swing state, where we are at now with these two remaining reactors, what it looks like for the prospects for shutting them and defeating the bailouts that have been proposed. And then we'll segue from that into Illinois. Dick, I know you're in Illinois. We want to talk about the bailout there. We'll talk about the bailout in New York. And then we'll look at the overall picture and even get to the $96 billion and counting nuclear waste dump proposed for Yucca Mountain. So, Dick, let's start with you. The two reactors in Ohio, they're old. They're funky. They're breaking down, especially Davis-Besse, the most notorious reactor in the world in many ways because of its many, many unique and astounding problems. I do want to say, by the way, that I am going through my papers after 50 years and have come across the original report that was done, and this is quite a document, that was done in 1987 on the viability of evacuating Perry and Davis-Besse, especially Perry, in the case of a meltdown. So this is 30 years ago this report was done. It was in the midst of a federal court suit trying to keep the Perry nuclear plant from going online. It was commissioned by the then governor, Richard Celeste, to see with a state body if the Perry nuclear plant could actually be evacuated. The report was done by Tom Chima, who was the chair of the Public Utilities Commission at the time, William Denahan, who was the head of the State Patrol, and another guy who was head of disaster services. And what happened was that Celeste, on our urging, sued the nuclear plant and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to keep them from licensing the Perry nuclear plant, which had just been hit by an earthquake. Apparently, in Ohio, on Lake Erie, was the first reactor in the United States actually physically damaged by an earthquake. And it happened, thankfully, when the plant was not yet open. And so at our behest, Dick Celeste commissioned these three guys to study the evacuation planning from Perry and asked the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to not license the plant before the study was done. And the NRC went ahead and licensed it anyway. Celeste took them to court and lost 2-1 in federal court. And then they finished the report. And the report said basically that it was absolutely positively impossible to evacuate Perry in the midst of an earthquake or a major meltdown. And I actually now have a copy of that report, which will be fun to circulate. Dick Munson in Chicago, if you will give us a thumbnail, you've been writing a lot of really great stuff about what's been happening in Ohio involving the bailout. The Perry nuclear and Davis Nursing nuclear plants are both now losing money, and the owners have gone to the state for bailouts. So, Dick, can you give us a rundown of what's been happening?
Well, I'll try. I think you were accurate in noting that Ohio is a bellwether state, and I think it's actually become ground zero for the electricity wars. Started a couple of years ago with First Energy, massive seven-state utility that made some really bad business decisions, largely investing in coal-fired power plants at a time when natural gas prices were really falling. As a result, over the last couple of years, they've been seeking at least $4 billion worth of subsidies, and they don't really care how they get it. They started by wanting $4 billion to make up the difference in their losing money on some coal plants and the Davis-Besse reactor. That got overturned by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, arguing that it was illegal because it disrupted regional electricity markets. So then they came back to the Public Utility Commission of Ohio and said, give us $12 billion this time. with no strings attached, simply so we can reduce our debts and make it easier for us to borrow money going forward. Then they also decided that they had suddenly become environmentalists and realized that their reactors, they argued, released no carbon pollution. Therefore, they were advantageous and needed, you won't be surprised, another $4 billion to keep them operating. So what you've seen in Ohio in the last couple of weeks, actually, the assumption was that these things were going to fly through the very conservative legislature and possibly also be signed by the Republican governor. And I think a large coalition has formed from consumer groups, including the Manufacturers Association, as well as competitors to the nuclear power and coal-fired power plants, including the American Petroleum Institute, of all things. And suddenly the provisions in these requests for bailouts have been stalled in committees. I will never underestimate First Energy or the Ohio utilities and their willingness to come back and argue for more. But at least for the moment, a very broad coalition of citizen groups, including manufacturers and API of all things, have scuttled these provisions and hopefully can build their strength because the arguments in favor of providing these bailouts really just don't hold up under scrutiny.
It's an astounding story. So they went from $4 billion to $12 billion, back to $4 billion. And my understanding is that none of the funds, we got a little noise in the background there, none of the funds that they've been asking for are specifically earmarked. In other words, they just want these rate hikes and bailout checks to go into the general fund of First Energy, and then they're going to do whatever they want. Is that correct?
Yeah, even more, just to put a little twist on this, the one request that they made for $12 billion to the Public Utility Commission of Ohio, the PUCO, as it's called, didn't approve that much, but they did tentatively agree to give them $625 million. And this, just to give you a sense of the oddness of Ohio regulation, First Energy gets to start receiving the benefits of that rate increase, even though it has not been formally approved, and under a condition so that they don't have to give the money back, even if the PUCO decides not to formally approve it, or if it's overturned by the Ohio Supreme Court. So to date, they've been racking up. They're now at $65 million and counting for something that hasn't been even formally approved, and they're just pocketing it. they at one point said that they would use the money for grid modernization, you know, to upgrade their, you know, smart meters and you know, system dynamics. But they basically ended up saying, just give us the money and it will allow us to reduce our debt and improve our credit rating so we can borrow more money.
Now, let's make it quite clear. There's nothing in the language of these bailouts that would prevent First Energy executives from doubling or tripling their own salaries.
No, obviously, when most companies in America get into trouble, they think about reducing the benefits or bonuses to executives or reducing the dividend to stakeholders. First Energy would prefer simply having their own customers be ordered by the state government to bail them out. So, it's from a conservative perspective, it's corporate cronyism at its utmost. And fortunately, I think, you know, we're seeing a broad coalition, Sierra Club, and other groups have been working, you know, tirelessly to highlight the craziness of the bailout proposals, and that seems to be gaining traction.
Well, Pat Morita, you were with me in a hearing in the State House in Columbus. Now, I've been going to hearings in Columbus for 30 years. And I have never, I mean, I stopped going, and I started, it was just more than I could take. It was like being in a dead zone. But at this hearing, they actually this was a hearing on one of the many bailouts proposed. They actually led with testimony from an Ohio State professor who really was against it. I was quite shocked. And then you testified. I had to leave, but. Can you comment on what happened at this particular hearing and what happened with the bailout in subsequent days?
Well, I testified before both the House and the Senate on the Senate Bill 128 and House Bill 178 was the same bill. All the details of by the end of the time. Most of the senators that had left when I testified against the Senate bill, but I was able to testify for the Ohio Sierra Club and also had an opportunity to answer some questions that they asked, which was really useful at the Senate. At the House, the chair decided at the very last minute that he would was anxious to close the meeting and so kept waving his hand all the time I was speaking. So I only got to talk about 3 or 4 minutes.
One of the things
I mentioned that Dick alluded to, too, was that First Energy is really not in a pickle because of Davis, Bessie, and Perry. It's in a pickle because of its acquisition of Allegheny Energy, I think back in 2011. And actually, you know, one of our members, Lee Blackburn, did an analysis of First Energy's annual report of 2016 and crunched the numbers, and they estimated that the value of their Ohio nuclear plants to be only $245.9 million. And, of course, they're wanting a $5 billion bailout. And it showed that without the paper loss, that Davis, Bessie, and Samus coal plant actually made money in 2016. We know that, yes, the nuclear reaction itself does not produce carbon, but all the way through, I mean, we've got uranium mining with environmental justice issues. We've got 10,000 abandoned uranium mines out west. We've got the refining or milling. We've got enrichment that takes a lot of energy, the transportation, the fuel fabrication. It's ridiculous to say that nuclear has zero carbon. So
yes. Now, Kevin Camps, you've been following.
So the hearings, I think, as you both have said, there were an awful lot of people that donate money to the legislators who came out there and opposed these two bills. So I think it gave them pause. And then also the legislators up in northern Ohio heard a lot from their constituents about having their rates raised. So that, I think, helps slow down the momentum of these bills.
Right. And these bailouts would involve massive rate hikes that people in the entire state would pay. Similar, I think, to New York State, where Governor Cuomo has put in for $7.6 billion for four reactors upstate, and he wants people as far away as Long Island to pay these higher rates, even though they don't get any electricity from them. Kevin Camps, you've been following this pretty closely. As a Michigan boy, you really know more about Davis-Bessie than pretty much anybody else. What do you see the situation as being now with these bailouts for Perry and Davis-Bessie, and what's going to happen if they don't go through?
Well, thanks, Harvey. I just wanted to say thank you so much to EDF and to Sierra Club for fighting the good fight against these bailouts for so many years now, just at every turn, before the Public Utility Commission of Ohio, now before the state legislature of Ohio. So just tremendous work. So appreciative. My focus for a long time now has been on the safety risks at Davis-Bessie. And you alluded to that, Harvey, earlier. Davis-Bessie's had more near misses with catastrophe than any other U.S. nuclear reactor, maybe more than any other atomic reactor in the world. I mean, they've had about a half dozen near misses with major calamity. And kind of the instant that I realized how significant these safety risks are at Davis-Bessie was in Kiev, Ukraine, of all places, on the 20th anniversary of Chernobyl. In 2006, I was in the audience listening to a Chernobyl nuclear power plant whistleblower speaking about problems at Chernobyl and similar RBMK design Russian reactors around the former Soviet Union. And I had a headphone on that translated. A translator was in the back of the room translating from Russian into English. And so I was listening to the translation, but I heard the whistleblower say Davis-Bessie very clearly. So I sure perked up then. And the translation was, well, you know, yes, RBMK reactors are very dangerous. Just look what happened at Chernobyl. But I got to hasten to add that, you know, Russian reactors aren't the only problem. Let me tell you about Davis-Bessie in Ohio. And he described the hole-in-the-head fiasco, you know, that came to light in 2002. And so the point that I just want to make is that Davis-Bessie, we learned in late 2011, essentially has no containment. At least the shield building, which is the steel rebar reinforced concrete outer shell that you see as you go by the Davis-Bessie nuclear power plant, that's what you're looking at. And it is severely cracked. We knew that in late 2011. We found out about mid-2014 that it's not only severely cracked, it's getting worse with every freeze-thaw cycle. By a half inch in circumferential orientation, those cracks grow every time it freezes and thaws again at Davis-Bessie. So who knows what it's going to look like if it ever gets hit by another tornado like it did in 1998, June of 1998. If there's an earthquake, whether natural or artificial, there is fracking activity up in that neck of the woods. Tornado-driven projectile into the shield building exterior. It might not even take an external force. It could just take gravity and entropy. And incredibly, very late in the game on the license extension, actually it was a poised for rubber stamp at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission before a body called the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards, which is the last rubber stamp at the NRC. First Energy, for the first time in years of our contesting it before the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board, just admitted openly, oh, we've known since we discovered the cracks in 2011 that big chunks of concrete could fall off the exterior face of the building, and wouldn't you know, there's safety systems down below. You could cause a meltdown at Davis-Bessie just by having the concrete fall off the outside face of the shield building. That could be the initiator, and the containment's not going to hold it in once the meltdowns happen because it just fell apart. So as important as the dollars and cents are, and they are, very important to everybody, especially folks who have to work for a living, there's also these safety risks. And so if Davis-Bessie, if the worst happens there, then people are going to have to relocate at the very least, if not get injured or killed in the radioactive releases. So it should have shut down a long time ago. It certainly should have shut down on Earth Day of 2017. That was the expiration of its 40-year license. But despite our best efforts, the NRC rubber stamped 20 more years. And so it's good to go until 2037 on paper, but I don't think it's going to make it that long. The question is, when the big breakdown, the next one, happens, how bad is it going to be? And to, you know, demand a bailout to keep this potential catastrophe going is just absurd.
Wow. I mean, you know,
if I can note even one more absurdity, First Energy, in their request for the subsidies, also admit that they really don't want to continue owning the nuclear reactors. They want to sell them because I think they realize that there are lemons and that they, First Energy, are not very good about working in the competitive electricity markets. They would significantly prefer being a monopoly that is guaranteed profits. So that's also a political liability for them because it's a hard one to sell within the halls of the Ohio legislature that they want a bailout for power plants that they won't even continue to own. And when they sell them, whoever the new owner isn't obligated to, you know, keep them open and the jobs and the tax revenue coming into the communities.
It's astounding, the chutzpah of these guys. You know, chutzpah, that's a nuclear term that was used in the Manhattan Project. you have to live here to understand that these guys absolutely don't seem to care about, of course, now we have Trump in the White House. So the rest of the country has come up to Ohio, which is really Alice in Wonderland when it comes to things. You have this utility up north. They have these two nuclear plants. They're huge. And the utility company has pledged, you know, Kevin has just run through a litany of the safety features of Davis Bessie, which could blow at any minute. I mean, it's just incredibly dangerous. And not one cent of the $4 billion that they are proposing to take from Ohio ratepayers is earmarked to deal with any of these safety issues. I mean, you know, it's just give us the money. We're going to run this thing into the ground. We don't care. We don't have to. It's astounding. Now, Dick, I wonder, there's one thing that came up, and I was incredibly gratified about this. You know, again, I mean, Pat and I, we're used to losing in this state. But they did. It appeared that the legislature really had reached its limit now and had pretty much decided not to give them a bailout. And then it turns out, which is a staggeringly huge victory for the entire anti-nuclear movement and in the course of the safe energy movement, the idea that First Energy could be turned down on a bailout by the Ohio legislature, which, by the way, has Republican supermajorities in both houses and a Republican governor who's actually to the left of the legislature. John Kasich is significantly to the left of the Ohio legislature. But they turned around and they slipped in a 270-word paragraph into the Ohio budget. Can you characterize this, Dick? I mean, it's staggering.
Well, what as I mentioned before, First Energy went to the Public Utility Commission of Ohio and said, give us a bunch of money simply so that we can make our credit rating better so that we'd be able to borrow more money at lower rates. They're on pretty sketchy legal grounds to do that. Is that, you know, a just and reasonable use of you know, ratepayer money? Probably not. So they tried at the last minute to sneak something into the budget bill, this 200-some-odd word amendment, that would give the Public Utility Commission of Ohio the authority to consider a utility's credit rating as a means to give them higher rate increases so that that could be enhanced so they could borrow more money. That we were able to, with a broad coalition of folks, strip from the budget bill. So you're exactly right as far as the chutzpah of, you know, First Energy is concerned. But I think the intriguing story is in this bellwether state, you're finally seeing that a pretty broad coalition of, you know, from manufacturers to conservatives to liberals to anti, you know, nuke folks, the array are getting sick and tired of just dealing with the chutzpah and the demand that they get bailed out for their own bad business decisions.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And Pat and I were in the room with, we're not used to being in the same room on the same side with the Ohio Manufacturers Association. I think the Chamber of Commerce, a few others. Pat, there are a lot of business groups that testified against this bailout, as you'll recall, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. From the League of Women Voters to the Ohio Manufacturers Association, just a broad coalition. But back to the bill for the PUCO that was snuck into the budget bill, that was, as Dick said, it failed, thankfully. But Ned Ford has said that the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, could actually do that on their own. They wouldn't need legislative approval to do that. So I think we need to keep an eye on the PUCO.
I totally agree, although I would note that, I think Sierra Club and EDF and a bunch of others are waiting for them being the PUCO, to make their final decision so we can take them to the Ohio Supreme Court, because I think they're not on very solid legal grounds, and I would welcome our day in court when we get a chance.
Well, then we can take it to the U.S. Supreme Court and hear what Clarence Thomas has to say. But this paragraph went into the budget bill, I thought we were doomed, and because I thought it would slide through. But it's really a tribute to the change of tone here in Ohio that something like that would get pulled out of the budget bill. And I have to say, there was one amazing moment, Pat and I, in this legislative hearing, where someone from the plant was talking about the jobs that were guaranteed by the continued operation of Davis Bessie. And one of the legislators said something I never thought I'd hear from an Ohio legislature. He said that the higher rates, he said it very diplomatically, but that the higher rates would actually cost jobs in Ohio. That's a level of analysis that I haven't heard from anybody in the Ohio legislature. Kevin, around the country, are you seeing legislators anywhere getting the message that higher electric rates from nuclear bailouts are costing people jobs?
Yeah, I mean, the scenario that was put out there by Dick a little while ago, the First Energy lobbyists securing a bailout from Ohio ratepayers on their electric bills and then turning around and selling Davis Bessie to another company, let's say it would be Exelon of Chicago, just as a possibility, and then away Exelon goes, kind of benefiting from this bailout. That is exactly the dynamic that took place in New York State with the Fitzpatrick nuclear power plant. It was previously owned by Entergy. It was losing money. Entergy announced it was going to close it in January of 2017, and then Governor Cuomo, for some bizarro reason, decides to bail out the upstate New York reactors, four of them, including Fitzpatrick, to the tune of $7.6 billion, like you said, Harvey, at New York State ratepayer expense. That's households, that's businesses of all sizes. It's schools, it's hospitals, you name it. Anybody who uses electricity and has to pay for it is being surcharged to keep these four reactors open. And Entergy goes through. It's not closing the plant now. It's selling it to Exelon. And so Exelon is going to be the beneficiary of New York consumers' electric bill surcharges. It's just really astounding. And to answer your question, Harvey, members of the New York State Senate, anyway, unfortunately, the good guys lost, but it was a very close vote where the New York State Senate tried to reverse what Cuomo had done. And Cuomo is being very stubborn about it. The lawsuits continue. Beyond Nuclear is a party, a peripheral party. It's really being led by, for example, households in New York that have solar panels that are still being, they provide all their own electricity. They even sell electricity surplus back to the grid. They're being surcharged on their electric bills to bail out these atomic reactors. And so those are the kinds of folks who have provided us standing, our members up there with solar on the rooftops. And there's a whole coalition of environmental groups, and like has been said at Ohio there, in New York too, manufacturers associations, business associations. So yeah, there are legislators that get it around the country. Another example of a legislator who gets it is a fiscal conservative Republican, actually even Tea Party Republican in Florida, who thought that new reactor loan guarantees were a good idea, thought that new reactor construction work in progress was a good idea, until the nuclear utilities in Florida managed to spend $3 billion on initial studies of a new reactor in Levy County, and they didn't even break ground, and they wasted $3 billion, and it all went up in smoke because they canceled the project. And then that legislator saw the light and took his message on the road, went to places like Iowa and said, don't you fall for this stuff. We've been robbed in Florida. I fell for it. Don't you fall for it. And he helped to win some big victories in places like Iowa against these nuclear subsidies.
Right. Well, when they spend $3 billion on a nuclear reactor and don't even break ground, that's called breaking wind, actually. Dick Munson, can you tell us, what do you think is going to happen now in Ohio with Perry and David Spessy? Are they going to go through and sell these reactors and continue to operate them? And then, what's the prognosis?
Well, I mean, the glory of the political process is we honestly don't know. And a lot depends upon, I think, how broad of a coalition and effective we are in blocking these subsidies and bailouts. I mean, I think the discussion that we've been having, you know, highlights that there's a real bipartisan approach to these issues that perhaps we haven't fully recognized. But conservative lawmakers are not happy with monopolies. They like markets. They don't really like, you know, subsidies and bailouts, viewing them as sort of corporate cronyism, and prefer, you know, competition. We can speak that language in ways that, you know, encourage investment and innovation in the market that bring on the new and don't subsidize the old.
Well,
this is Pat. I could add too, you were asking about who was opposing these bills, and interestingly enough, the same man, Mike Addary, spoke before the House and Senate, both in Ohio, representing Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers. So here we are, you know, on the same side as the Koch brothers opposing these bailouts. So I think the Koch brothers do have some influence there in all of this.
Well, I'm sure if we persuaded the Koch brothers that this was like a medical program for poor people, they'd kill the reactors immediately. So we also have in Ohio, and Kevin, maybe you're familiar with this, a few years ago they snuck into the law a restriction on wind power that requires setbacks for windmills from which are really unsustainable. And as a result of that, I have seen figures as high as $1.5 billion worth of wind projects that were stopped, that were approved and ready to go and were stopped by this particular setback requirement, which is completely unique. It's ridiculous. It has absolutely no bearing in the realities of safety or anything else. And that if that setback were actually lifted, wind would come pouring into Ohio. You know, Ohio has very good wind regime in northern Ohio. It's flat. The farmers really want windmills. There's all the transmission that you'd ever need, which is a big barrier to wind power. And the windmills would be fairly close to the urban areas. So I think that if that setback is a requirement is lifted, and I can see there's a constituency growing for that, the whole energy balance in northern Ohio is going to shift pretty quick. And I wonder if that would have an impact on Exelon, who seems to be the only interested buyer wanting to come in and buy Perry and David Spessy. Kevin, do you have any information on that?
Yeah, I'll just add that I just glanced at a Cleveland Plain Dealer article about this, defeat of the bailout in the Ohio budget bill, and it did mention this wind power provision that's so onerous. The figure they gave was $4.2 billion in wind power business that Ohio is foregoing because of this you know, blatant sabotage of wind power. And, you know, Ohio's sabotage of wind power is matched in other places like sabotage of solar power in places like Arizona and Nevada, where households that have solar panels are penalized financially for that. So it's because of the competition that fossil fuel burners and atom splitters don't want. They don't want this competition from solar and wind and efficiency, and so they try to kill it at every opportunity. So, you know, we've got to fight that. Renewables are the future if we're going to have a future on this planet. And I've lost track of your question, Harvey, and all my passion.
Well,
here,
no, that's
but
okay.
It's something that Tim Judson at NIRS, for example, way back in 2014, warned about. He wrote a white paper called Killing the Competition, and he pointed to these very policies that were pretty new at the time, the sabotage of wind, the sabotage of solar, the attempted bailouts. And something I do want to mention about Tim Judson's work more recently, too, is he did a coast-to-coast analysis of what if the New York model gets replicated at all the atomic reactors operating in the United States. And since his report came out, sure enough, Illinois replicated it to the tune of $2.35 billion for the next 10 years. His incredible figure was it would cost American electricity consumers $280 billion in handed over funds to the nuclear power industry. $280 billion with a B.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, if I can add about the wind setback, so there was a provision in the budget bill to modify that wind setback. And my understanding is that it is still in there. And if this budget bill passes with that in there, then that will make a big difference. I'm not sure that it is as liberal as we would like, but it's certainly better than Ohio's current provision, which is far greater setback than any other state in the U.S.
Yeah, it's a setback that makes sense only if you want to kill windmills. I mean, it serves no function and by any stretch of any imagination in terms of safety, health, performance, or anything like that. My understanding is that there is about $1.5 billion worth of wind projects that have already been approved and that are financed and simply waiting for the lifting of this wind restriction. But as I mentioned, $4.5 billion is not out of the question for windmills, even on land in northern Ohio, because the wind regime is very good. It's not as strong as the Dakotas or Minnesota, but it's steady. And as I say, all the transmission necessary is in place. The farmers are ready to go. It's flat up there, and they're close to the urban areas that would consume the power. So it's almost an ideal situation. Kevin mentioned Illinois. Dick, you're in Chicago. Can you tell us what's happening with the bailout in Chicago, in Illinois?
Well, I suppose the key distinction between Illinois and Ohio is the distinction between Exelon and First Energy. Exelon began in the same position where First Energy has been, basically asking for a bailout for two of their reactors and asking for like $500 million, you know, a year. And they were, you know, moving a piece of legislation through. And then a group that included the Sierra Club and NRDC and a whole variety of others formed the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, and we introduced our own bill, which, as you might guess, focused on efficiency and clean energy. And I think both sides recognized that we could not pass our own legislation by itself, and that there needed to be, if anything was going to get approved, there needed to be some compromise. And so there were numerous months of negotiations whereby a package came out, and you know, people have different views on this, but it did include some money, as I had mentioned before, about $230 million per year over 10 years for the two reactors in Illinois, but also a lot of money doubling the energy efficiency portfolio, providing $750 million for energy efficiency projects in low-income communities, you know, probably spurring about $15 billion of new solar and wind development within the state. So a package did get approved last November, passed by the Democratic legislature and signed by the Republican governor.
And there, as you would guess, any time that this happens, there are lawsuits that start flying. And similar to what's happening in New York, there are lawsuits for the Illinois legislation, specifically focusing on what are called the zero emission credits, or ZECs. These are the basically the subsidies, if you will, that will go to nuclear reactors for the claim that they are not emitting carbon. So where those stand, there's been a hearing in New York, and the Illinois hearing hasn't yet happened. And it becomes a complicated one because there's the potential to view the lawsuit in a way that if it is successful to challenge the state directed zero emission credits, that it could also lead to successful challenges of state efforts to advance things like renewable portfolio standards or other environmental provisions. So it's a complex and sort of tricky provision that sort of follows on what was a complex and tricky negotiation associated with this grand bargain in Illinois.
Yeah, it's a very delicate situation, I understand. Kevin, is there an analogy to that in New York in the lawsuits? There was no the New York $7.6 billion for the four reactors. And Dick, correct me if I'm wrong, it's two nuclear plants but three reactors in Illinois, right? That are being bailed out.
That is correct. Yes, that's correct.
It's two at Clinton and one at two at Quad Cities and one at Clinton, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. So, and then but there's no attached renewable package that goes with the nuclear bailouts in New York. Is that correct, Kevin?
Well, my understanding is that the nuclear bailout in New York is actually going to gobble up about two-thirds of the clean energy fund. So that's how these zero emissions credits, very late in the ballgame. It was a very rushed, breakneck process that Cuomo rammed through his Public Service Commission. And despite best efforts by the environmental movement to weigh in with comments, it just was rammed through. And then that zero emissions credits has been replicated, like has been said, in Illinois. There's been proposals in Ohio, is my understanding, elsewhere. And I really liked Dave Kraft of Chicago's Nuclear Energy Information Service. He made a point before the Illinois measure was approved. He asked, so are renewables like solar and wind going to be rewarded for the fact that they don't generate radioactive waste? Or are they going to be rewarded for the fact that they can't lead to the proliferation of nuclear weapons? Of course not. That's not, you know, what's on the table. So, you know, there's all this talk about zero emissions, and you just have to point out that nuclear power plants emit radioactive waste, for one thing. I know that carbon dioxide is the talk of the town, but nuclear power plants also emit radioactive carbon dioxide. It's actually one of the worst biological poisons that nuclear power generates. It's radioactive carbon-14 that can join a carbon dioxide molecule, and it can go anywhere carbon goes, which is everywhere in biology, including in human bodies. It has a 5,500-year half-life, which means 55,000 years of hazard. And so these emissions, like radioactive waste and radioactive gases and radioactive particles and liquids that get discharged into the environment on a routine day of operation at a nuclear power plant, but those wastes are forever. So when you multiply waste management times infinity, that is a lot of fossil fuel combustion with the equipment used just to maintain, to store, supposedly to dispose, but then you've got to monitor the disposal site and make sure it doesn't leak massively. We're talking a million years of hazard. The EPA itself recognizes that, but actually it's a lot longer than that. So assuming that forever radioactive waste management requirement has zero carbon dioxide emissions is inaccurate. So
yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's got to be accounted for in all these analyses.
Pat?
Well, speaking of waste, you know, there's this terrible bill at the U.S. level.
Yes, they want to start talking about reviving the idea of building Yucca Mountain, which was put on hold by Harry Reid and Barack Obama. What you never hear, and I'm starting to urge all my fellow safe energy activists, is that the 2008 estimate, for official estimate, for finishing the massive nuclear waste dump at Yucca Mountain, which I've been inside,
and I have seen the earthquake fault inside Yucca Mountain. The estimate for finishing it is $96 billion. I mean, nobody ever talks about the cost of finishing Yucca Mountain.
And, Harvey, you know, yesterday's measure that Pat mentioned that was passed incredibly by a vote of 49-4, four Democrats voted against, but a whole bunch of Democrats and all Republicans voted in favor. Shimkus from Illinois, the sponsor of this 2017 Nuclear Waste Policy Amendments Act, as it's called, one of the lines, one of his amendments, I think it was, increased the allowable amount of waste to be dumped at Yucca from 70,000 metric tons to 110,000 metric tons. So I guess just back of the envelope, you're going to have to increase that price tag, Harvey, by about half, I guess, to accommodate another 40,000 metric tons of waste at Yucca. That's more burial tunnels. That's the big expense out there. It's insanity. It's not just Yucca. It's also these de facto permanent parking lot dumps targeted at West Texas and southeastern New Mexico, two sites within 40 miles of each other. The whole idea is to turn this neck of the woods in the southwest into a nuclear sacrifice zone, because you've already got uranium enrichment on the Texas-New Mexico border. You've got waste control specialists right on the border burying the nation's so-called low-level radioactive wastes. And that's one of the targeted sites for this high-level waste parking lot dump. So we have to do a lot of work. We have to do much better on the House floor vote on this measure. We have to try to block it completely on the Senate side. Because if this thing goes through with those parking lot dumps, you're looking at transports, unprecedented numbers of trucks, trains, and barges starting to roll 5 years from now or less, depending on how serious they are about just ramming this down the throat of communities, which are mostly Latin American with significant poverty rates out in Texas and New Mexico.
I should point out one thing, by the way, as we proceed, that we mentioned earlier that people in Nevada and Arizona were being taxed for their solar panels. I think that we actually won that in Nevada, and that was reversed. And that's a pretty big deal. And so, Kevin, I think what we got going here, and Dick and Pat, we're actually almost running out of time here, is the race is on even more intensely than ever before between renewables and this kind of insanity with nuclear power and nuclear waste. And, I would predict that if and this seems like such a small thing, but if the this restriction on wind power in Ohio is lifted, that there's going to be a massive influx of wind construction into Ohio. And I can't imagine anybody under any circumstances buying, even Exelon buying, Perry and Davis Bessie. And, Dick, you mentioned, or you were talking about renewables in Illinois. What was the number you gave of the estimated dollar value of renewables coming into Illinois in the near future?
It was $15 to $17 billion.
Is that with a B? Are you saying 15
yes,
to 17?
Yes, with a B.
So that would be
a lot
wind
of money.
And solar. Well, I mean, it's, how can the nuclear plants even begin to compete with that? I mean, when they start shutting, I mean, even if there's a tiny remnant of a market economy in electricity in Illinois, $15 billion worth of renewables is going to completely drop electric prices through the floor.
Well, I think both that and the combination of doubling the energy efficiency portfolio so that the demand will at the most be flat but more likely fall. Yes, this would be tough times for, you know, old power plants that are not exactly economic, even if they are getting some subsidies, which returns me to sort of the theme that I think is a very conservative one, is that certainly people, centrists, want investments in innovation and the new technologies that are coming online. And the new approaches, you know, from blockchain to batteries to the obvious, you know, huge reductions in the cost of solar and wind provide just enormous opportunities that I would think we can develop a broad political coalition to advance it.
Well, have we had instances yet? I think I saw an article somewhere, and I may have even posted it at nukefree.org, where even subsidized nukes now are not able to compete with renewables. For example, Dick, in Illinois, if those three reactors are subsidized, but $15 billion of wind comes into the state, are they going to still be able to compete? I bet they're not.
Well, Exelon is banking on the fact that they will, and, you know, obviously lots of people have banked on energy economics for a long time, predicting particularly the price of natural gas, and they lost a lot of money in the process. So we are at a, you know, not exactly a time of a turning point, but it's a very exciting time, you know, to be involved in these electricity wars, because it could, we're at a tipping point, and the potential for new technologies and investment is just huge.
Oh, I think we're actually past the tipping point. You know, I mean, look what's happening in Germany. There's so much cheap electricity in Germany coming from solar and from wind power. My nephew is a professor of solar energy at George Washington. He says that solar is now at 3 cents a kilowatt. And lastly, in Germany, even subsidized nuclear plants can't compete with that. Is that correct? Kevin or Pat or Dick?
Yeah, I mean, Germany is leading the world in this vision for the future of, you know, you call it solartopia, Harvey. Germany's going to phase out nuclear power by 2022. That is a Chernobyl and Fukushima lesson learned that Germany is applying. They're going to, you know, reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 85% levels over, I believe, 2005 levels by mid-century, which is a huge, you know, reduction in combustion of fossil fuels, and certainly doing it more efficiently for one thing. They have world-class efficiency standards already in place, and they're improving them all the time in Germany. And they're showing that the fourth largest economy in the world can do this. So what about the first largest economy in the world, which is the United States? I just wanted to mention that Ohio example I gave of the Republican state senator from Florida going up there and saying, don't fall for construction work in progress charges on your bill. Don't fall for subsidies for nuclear. When Warren Buffett was not able to build his small modular reactor in Iowa with state subsidies, he instantly turned to a major wind farm to generate the same amount of electricity so much more cheaply without the need for the public intervention to make it happen, because it was so affordable, you know. And the great crossover on solar versus nuclear took place a decade ago. The great crossover for wind and nuclear took place more like 15 years ago. So, you know, if economics have anything to say about it, renewables are the future.
And subsidies for nuclear are actually harming any kind of support that could be otherwise given for renewables.
Well, we'll see now. I think we're, as Dick says, we're at the tipping point. Dick Munson in Chicago, how do people get a hold of you and your organization? Did we lose Dick Munson there?
I'm sorry. I got on mute and I couldn't punch the button. Excuse me.
You can reach me at
dmunson@edf.org. Happy to hear from folks.
Okay. And Pat Morita here in Ohio?
Yes. I'm Pat Morita, M-A-R-I-D-A, at outlook.com. And you can also look for the No Nuclear Ohio Sierra Club on Facebook.
And Kevin Camps?
Yeah, it's just kevin@beyondnuclear.org. And visit our website at www.beyondnuclear.org.
Okay, so a quick last word from everybody until the song comes on. Dick, give us a prediction here. Are the bailouts going to hold up in Illinois, and will wind drive the nukes out of business?
I think economics, as Kevin was noting, is going to win in the end. You can only, you know, tamper with markets for so long, but once the prices, you know, move to Warren Buffett's and others of the world, I think we're going to see rapid change.
Pat Morita in Ohio.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems to be that way. I'm certainly right now most concerned about this Nuclear Waste Policy Amendments Act
3053. It's going through very fast, and it would even preempt local water and air rights, state water rights and air rights, and eliminate all kinds of safety requirements and so forth. So stay tuned, and by all means, anybody who's listening here, call your representative and your two Ohio senator or your two federal senators, wherever state you're listening from, and oppose this 3053. Say we don't, you know, we need safe storage for nuclear waste, or safe as possible. I don't know that there is any really safe storage.
No, there is. The only safe way to deal with nuclear waste is not created. Kevin Camps, your last word real quick.
Along the same lines as Pat there, everybody call your U.S. representative, call your U.S. senators. You can do that through the Capitol switchboard, which is area code 202-224-3121. The alternative to the Yucca dump, the parking lot dumps, and the mobile Chernobyls is hardened on-site storage as close as possible to the point of generation, as safely as possible.
All right, how are you? Thank you so much, and let's just pray that these renewables come in before we have another reactor explode on us, as Kevin, you laid out so graphically. We are in such danger of Davis-Bessey and silly these old reactors everywhere else in the country. Thank you, crew in New York. We'll see you next week in Solartopia in a nuclear-free world.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know?